Good evening, everyone. Welcome to tonight's Joe and Joe Weather Show on the 16th of September 2021. The Joe and Joe Weather Show brought to you by Omni True Value Hardware at 1226 North Wellwood Avenue in West Babylon. And of course, before you know it, it'll be wintertime and snowing, and you'll be needing salt. And just like a lot of things, there is going to be a shortage of salt because they actually have to bring it in from overseas. They mine some of it here, but they bring the rest of it in. But Omni uses the mined version. So from locally, when I say locally, I mean, you know, in the reasonably close nearby geography. So the prices will be lower here. So check them out because they do have the best prices in town. They'll also have plenty of Pelado and Mag ice pellets and flakes at Omni True Value Hardware at 1226 North Wellwood Avenue in West Babylon, 631-756-1125. The website is omnitruevalue.com. Wholesale holiday lighting by Giannini, your complete holiday lighting specialist, meeting all your decorating needs. If you're a contractor and you're decorating other people's houses, there's going to be an open house. Again, this is for contractors on Tuesday, October 5th from 9 to 6 p.m. And you can RSVP by calling them at 631-957-5106 or go to the website, which is liholidaylighting.com. They've got decorations for Halloween. They've got decorations for Christmas. And we're counting down 100 days before Santa arrives. Wholesale holiday lighting by Giannini. So, Mr. Rayo, I think is with us. Ho, ho, ho. Merry Xmas. Hang on, I gotta move this out. Move us in. Here we go.
Isn't it amazing that during the summer season we were told that there was a severe supply of chlorine for pools, and now as we move into the winter months, there's a severe low supply of salt.
Oh, just so listen. If you're buying toys for Christmas for kids, if you're buying trying to get the latest hot toy, if you haven't got it by now, you may not have it for Christmas. Because I was talking to the folks over at Wholesale Holiday Lighting by Giannini, and they were saying how the supply chain is all bottled up. There's stuff that's supposed to be coming in from overseas, from China. It's getting into California. Then they got to railroad it across. And there's bottlenecks. And it's not just that. I was talking with a friend of mine today. He's been trying to get his car repaired for the last 3 or 4 weeks, and he needed this part. It's I don't even remember what the part was, but it's not anything unusual. They can't get it. And if they can get the part, you have to pay double and triple the price for it because they just don't have them. It's the world we live in right now with all these bottlenecks.
Incredible.
Yes.
Incredible.
So I wanted to tell you, and I'm really mad at myself because I should have done this when I had it. There was a comment on the one of our YouTube videos over the last couple of days, and I wanted to save it and send it to you. So when I went to get it, now I can't find it. So either the person took it down because I responded to it, or I just haven't been able to be lucky enough to figure out which live show it was on. But the basic premise, well, first of all, I want to give this person a lot of credit. It was one of the best passive aggressive comments I have read in a long, long time. So if I could give you an award for passive aggressiveness, this one was brilliant. Saying that I shouldn't even be doing this show anymore because I'm not living full time up in the New York area. Okay. So I was like, okay, that's fine. And then, you know, got on the both of us because apparently we don't spend our time on this show jumping on the climate change choo-choo train that's going on. And I just simply said, I've explained it again, you know, and then went on to call us climate change deniers and all the rest of it. Also suggesting, Joe, that it might be time for you and I to both stop the show and just retire while our reputations are still good we will soil our reputations in the same way that Tex Antoine soiled his. I just, you know,
Well,
we don't need to talk about that. That's, if anybody wants to Google that, they can figure that one out. But, you know, I'm just going to say this about it. I've said, and you and I have talked about this, and I've said this many times, I have no desire to sit here and discuss the politics beyond, you know, that the climate change argument becomes. And his post, his comment is exactly the reason why I really don't want to get into it. It gets divisive. It's nasty. You know, people need to understand something, because if we are asking questions, okay, asking questions is not denying. Asking questions is what we do. It's what people who are into science, they look at things and they ask questions. And that's what we're asking. Just because we're asking questions doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, we're quote unquote deniers. What it means is that we don't robotically follow zealots who have no idea what they're talking about, but because it makes them feel good, they get upset because they don't get validation from us. Okay, I'm not here to give you validation about what your perspective, what your perspectives are with regards to your politics. I don't want anything to do with it. We're a weather show. We do weather. If we were a climate show, we would do climate. Sometimes they do overlap, but just because we question things, it's because we want to come to an better understanding of what, you know, what is going on, and not because we have some political agenda behind it. And that's all. I think that's how I responded to this person. So we're not going to be ending the show anytime soon, though. I he may be disappointed in that.
Well, I did a report about global warming and climate change for News 12 back in 2012 or 2013, and I just played the role of reporter, Joe. I did not indicate anything in terms of opinions on weather or climate or whatever. I did interview experts in the field, and before I even did this report, I told a few people, yeah, hey, I'm going to do a report on global warming and climate change or whatever. And everybody I spoke to a person said, I wouldn't do that. You know, the only thing you're going to get out of it is stress and axes and knives and all kinds of stuff. I didn't really understand. And I said, no. I'm going to play it right down the middle. I'm going to present opposing views or whatever. And
you get hated by both sides.
And what ended up happening was that I had so many people come after me. You know, one said, I'm gonna make it a point to try to get you fired. I thought your report was highly irresponsible. I'm gonna try to get you in trouble with all of your affiliations or whatever. How dare you put on a report like that or whatever? And I couldn't understand it. And the funny thing was then when I told my boss. My boss, Janine Rose, was the news director at News 12, and also the assistant news director, Stan Kowalski. Yes, that was his name, Stan Kowalski.
he was done with Streetcar and Tennessee Williams, and he decided to go into television. Go on.
Exactly. I showed them the emails, and I said, my goodness, I mean, all these people are gunning for me because of this. Report that actually was a two-part series called Climate of Concern. And I'm showing them all these emails of threats of people who, they must have been from the Al Gore Society, because they did not like one person in particular on the report. When I asked him about why is it that 40 years ago, the climate experts were saying we were heading for an ice age, and now they're saying we're heading for global warming and extreme warmth on the earth. And this person's response was, because they don't know, Joe. That was the thing that set everybody off. And that's when everybody started emailing and saying, I hate you. I hate your report. I'm going to do something. I'm going to get you fired or whatever. And I showed this to Janine and Stan. They looked at it. Then they looked at me and they looked at each other and then they started laughing. I said, what are you laughing for? This is serious, isn't it? And Janine very kindly said, Joe, how many years you've been with us? And I said, I don't know, about 15 or 18 years. He said, how many special reports have you done? I said, well, a good number of them. He said, have you ever gotten a response like this? I know, Joe, that you did some very good job with all of your other reports, and they were very good. Don't get me wrong, but did you ever get a response like this? I said, no, Janine, I never have. He said, well, that's what we're looking for, Joe. We're looking for controversy. We're looking for people to get upset. This shows that people watched your report, and you got a reaction.
Yeah,
Joe, we want more reports with reactions like this. I'm sweating bullets thinking my career is over, and they loved it. And I guess that's the idea of every news director and every executive producer.
Yeah, no, Oscar Wilde once said, the only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about. And,
exactly.
And that's that really is what it boils down to. It's the fact that you even dare ask a question like that is a problem for that one side. Okay. For that one side who has this sort of zealot approach to things, and they're not in the science field. So sure, because hey, climate change makes, I'm doing something, you know, it's I'm supporting something that's going to make the world a better place. Okay, that's fine. No one is opposed. I mean, I can't imagine somebody saying, you know, I'm against a cleaner earth. Okay. I'm against, you know, doing things that will make, that are more energy efficient, that are better for the planet. But the question is, it's who makes those policies? Okay. If you don't think that this is about money and wealth and moving it in different directions, and I'm not making a judgment about this, I'm stating the obvious here. If you don't believe that that's what this is, a good chunk of what this is about is money and transfer of wealth. Okay. At the very least, you're incredibly naive. Okay. And have no real realistic view for how the world of politics works. And I don't want to have conversations about that. Okay. I've said many times on this show, the earth has warmed. It has warmed by 2 or 3 degrees or whatever it is over the last 40 or 50 years. There has been warming. Now, everything else, what to do about it, that's out of my bailiwick. That's politics. That's government. That's corporations involved in all of that. I don't want to talk about that stuff. Okay. I mean, that's.
I remember once leading into the weather, they ran a report about global warming and climate change or whatever. And they came out of it. They threw it to me. And I said, well, you know, there was a study done not too long ago by a very well-regarded, highly respected Italian scientist who said that in 10,000 years, we're going to be heading back toward another ice age, and that there are going to be places with 1,000 feet of ice in places such as Chicago and New York and whatever. And then the camera closes in on me and I said, and there you are, worried about the fact that tomorrow morning your driveway may have 1 to 2 inches of snow on it.
Well, here's the thing. In the wintertime, you're going to get people to say, because they, you know, they talk about it as climate change and not global warming. So now we're in this silliness, the silly season now. And have been for a while, or, you know, Joe, we're going to have two partly sunny, cloudy to partly sunny days in a row. That's because of climate change. Okay. I mean, everything we're having drizzle. That's climate change.
Well, that's
change.
What I said last night.
And that's what I said last night. And that's where it drives me crazy, because I'm forecasting weather. You're forecasting weather. That's what we do. Okay. If you want to have a conversation about climate, you need to talk. You need to go to a climatologist's YouTube channel, because they're looking at stats over decades and decades and research and looking at dating ice, layers of ice and figuring out what the temperatures were 300, 400, 500 years ago. You need to talk to them. Okay, because you know they that's what they're doing. They're looking at climate and weather. You know, they're the same and yet they're not. Okay, there is a big difference. You and I do the day to day. So in the wintertime it snows. In the summertime it gets hot. Sometimes it gets very cold. Sometimes it gets very hot. And sometimes it's just normal or average. And there's snowstorms and there's rainstorms and then there's hurricanes and tropical storms and there's drought and there's all sorts of other things that make life terribly inconvenient. But, you know, we forecast those things. If you want to discuss policy, go to a political channel, go to a climatologist YouTube channel. You know, we're going to stay on the air until we're very old and we're soiling ourselves. We're soiling ourselves on a regular basis. Okay.
Well, that depends, Joe. That depends.
It does depend. Okay. And there's a shortage of those too, by the way, just so you know. All right. So I promised Robert Brown on the chat board, because he was worried. He's in North Carolina, and this low is off the North Carolina coast, so he's a bit on the nervous side. So I thought maybe what I'd do is here. And of course, you can agree or disagree with me, and I won't hold it against you. Whatever it is you do, to agree or disagree. But I wanted to take a look. We're going to look at the surface map here. This is from I have the 18Z up. I'll give it a quick refresh, and we'll see if we can get the latest one. It's not going to make too much of a difference in what I'm going to say here, but. You'll notice, first of all, off the North Carolina coast, we have a less than 10-12 low that was analyzed. And if you look at the wind barbs, I don't know if you could see it on your screen unless you're watching it on the big screen. I mean, there's clearly a circulation here. So there's a low that's developed, and it may or may not become a tropical depression or a tropical storm. Now, the more important feature to pay attention to is this stationary front that's running right from about 40 and 70 to Cape May, crosses the Delmarva Peninsula and into southeastern Virginia. Okay. Now, if this system were going to move northward, you would see this stationary front stalled somewhere across western New York, western Pennsylvania, down the Appalachians. Okay. And then you would see it probably ride up northward. And if you think back to a few days ago, this is the guidance that was indicating that. Well, guess what? Look at the orientation of the stationary front. It's running, as we said, from 40 and 70 into southeastern Virginia. That is effectively a brick wall here. And as a result, even if you didn't have the upper air, the fact that the stationary front is oriented in an east-west position, okay, that is a clue to you that if that front's not going to move, then this thing is going to have to move underneath it. And that's pretty much what's happening. And if we look at the corresponding upper air for this evening and take it out into the future, and I got the NAM up. I'm going to switch to the upper air here, and we'll take a look. Because it's going to reflect pretty much the idea of what that stationary front is acting. You know, as that brick wall. So if we follow I always say when you look at the upper air, you got to follow the flow. And here we are at 8 o'clock tonight. We'll take a look. Okay. You know, the upper flow off the East Coast is kind of it's light, but it's mostly south southwest. Okay. The ridge is out here to the east. We don't have ridging up to the north of this. So it can't really, I mean, it's going to try to get as close as it can to eastern North Carolina, but I imagine that the low center will probably stay offshore by a fair distance. And even if it becomes a tropical storm, it's not going to get anything much beyond that at this latitude. We don't usually see storms strengthen rapidly at this latitude. And then it's just going to make the turn because of the way the upper flow is. I mean, that pretty much is how it's going to work. And as we go forward, actually, the flow becomes even more, instead of going south-southwest, it becomes more southwest. And this is by Friday afternoon. You know, there's your low. sitting east of the Virginia coast, and there's your opening as it moves on out to the northeast. So I'm not concerned about this. We might see maybe the northern fringe, because this is not a purely tropical system. It's a tropical wave that started interacting with an upper trough, so it's a bit of a hybrid. So there might be rain that will be on the northwest side. You're seeing some hints of it out on the radar in the Atlantic east of the Delmarva Peninsula, and some of that may back westward. We've got showers and storms tonight back through Maryland and into northeastern Virginia. That's front-related. The stuff offshore is from, you know, the low. You might see some of that back up late tonight or tomorrow morning in the Delmarva Peninsula, or even touch Cape May for a short time. But then it's all going to go out. So you shouldn't be too concerned about this.
I don't think there is any need to. And you know what, Joe, and I may actually help us a bit, because if it does strengthen to any degree, and as it moves away to the north and east, it may actually help the winds to come out of a northerly and maybe eventually a north-northwest direction, which would replace the east or onshore flow that we're seeing right now, that cool, clammy flow, which is keeping us under mainly cloudy conditions. So a turn to the wind to the north or northwest during the upcoming weekend actually may set the stage for some improvement, nicer weather, lower dew points. So actually, this thing may do us a favor.
Oh yeah.
It may take a while in getting its act together. But still, when it finally does, it may actually help us. It may not actually be something that we need to fear.
Yeah, big upside on that, Joe. I was looking at the dew points on the GFS for Sunday, down, you know, the 40s, coming down through upstate New York, almost to about New York City. Dew points in the 50s from there south into northern Virginia, and those low dew points actually hang around from Monday into the first part of Tuesday. So yeah, once it goes by, the stronger it gets, the drier our air is going to get on the backside.
Right, right. And in fact, you can see on the upper, if you were to look at the upper air, the 500 on, for example, the GFS, the winds,
I'll
the
bring
winds
it up.
Are almost, the upper level winds from now till about midday on Saturday are almost nondescript. I mean, they're light. They're mostly coming from a west or southwesterly direction. That's the upper air winds, I should point out, not the lower air winds. We have differential advection going on, by the way. In the higher levels of the atmosphere, we have west-southwesterly breezes, but because of high pressure to our north, we're getting an onshore flow, a light onshore flow, from the ocean, from the east, which is keeping us more cloudy than sunny. But then, as we move through the day on Saturday, sometime around midday on Saturday, the upper level winds start to turn out of a northwest direction, and they continue to turn northwesterly more and more and more until finally, when we get to Sunday, those upper level winds is a nice ridge of high pressure over the Great Lakes, and our winds at the high levels of the atmosphere are out of the northwest. We're into both at the upper levels and also at the surface, northwesterly breezes. And that storm, that tropical whatever, will be strengthening probably somewhere south and east of Nova Scotia and helping to turn the winds and pull them out of a northwest direction. So, again, that's going to help us, and that's going to set the stage for some noticeable improvements as we move on through the weekend and set us up for some nice weather for the start of next week.
Yep, and you can see the upper flow here. This is for Sunday with the northwest flow. There's actually a nice trough that's sitting near Nova Scotia that's out in the ocean that's swinging to the east. And, yeah, we'll get a nice break as far as the humidity is concerned. Some of that's going to bleed down almost to me, where I didn't even get out of the low 70s today, thanks to clouds. And a lot of clouds still dealing with some of the leftover moisture from Nicholas.
You're gonna hit 90 in late October, I predict. you're gonna be getting it from a diversion, from an unusual diversion of the Santa Ana winds that normally blow across California.
Yes.
They're gonna be bounced back toward northern Georgia, and that's when you're gonna start steaming up.
Yes, exactly. By the way, when you look at the satellite loop from the Gulf of Mexico all the way up into the Northeast, I mean, you just got this sort of wall of clouds, and then off the Carolinas, It's a little hard to see on this wide view. I was trying to load the tight view of this, but there's a whole bunch of missing frames, so I couldn't get it to work right. You can definitely see some, there is a low level center here that's turning, but obviously it's just not very well organized. At some point, you'll need a core of convection to develop, a little band of convection to develop in and around a center for them to make it a tropical depression or a tropical storm. But there is a low level center there. It's just very, very broad. And again, we got to wait for this to get out of the way, which means tomorrow will probably be a repeat of today with cloudy to occasionally partly sunny skies, depending on what you were, where you are. But right now we've got clouds all the way down, up and down the coast. We could see those showers. We said there's some heavier showers, downpours and thunderstorms around the Washington, D.C., Baltimore area, down in through central Virginia. Also seeing some showers and storms in parts of South Carolina, some very widely scattered stuff over me in North Georgia, some heavier stuff down near Savannah and near the Florida state line, along the Florida East Coast, some showers and storms in southwestern Florida, seeing some showers and storms scattered around, and in the central Gulf Coast, still some of this is rain from Nicholas that just seems to be very slowly raining itself out. Take a look at this, Joe. Look at this line up in Minnesota. Very impressive. Wait till the radar gets in the shot. You'll see it. Very impressive looking line. There's a tornado warning that popped up there, along with a severe thunderstorm warning. That's a sharp looking line there that's moving across eastern Minnesota. And that's where the Storm Prediction Center, by the way, has the risk today. Slight risk there into South Dakota and northern Nebraska. Severe weather risk is fairly minimal, I think, for the next couple of days. Let me just take a look really quick. For tomorrow, no risk area being indicated, and I believe also for day three, there's no risk areas being indicated. So that's good from that respect.
Yeah, we're kind of like right on the edge, so to speak. It doesn't seem like we have any. I saw the National Weather Service, the folks over at Upton, actually calling for an isolated thunderstorm risk tomorrow in the tri-state area. I honestly don't know where that they're getting that from. If we didn't have any thunderstorms today with the stationary front just off to our south, we certainly aren't going to have any tomorrow. And
right.
But, you know.
And Saturday evening, we do have with what's going on in the northern stream, as the northern stream strengthens, there is going to be like a very weak weather front that's going to move through, because the dew points on Saturday in the northeast are all in the 60s. And in some cases, even the middle 60s. There's a bit of a dew point front, I guess you want to call it, that comes on through early, sometime Saturday night. And that brings down the dry air for Sunday and for Monday. WPC, by the way, coastal plain, very dry from eastern New England all the way down into North Carolina over the next 7 days. Less than a tenth of an inch of precip, but a bit more in upstate New York. 3/4 of an inch to an inch and a half being indicated, especially in central New York. Back in parts of eastern Ohio and western PA. Still some significant rains continuing over the next week across the Florida and back through the Gulf states, several inches or more in many locations. And the Pacific Northwest about to get pounded here with mega amounts of rain. And I think I saw the folks on the chat board talking about Mount Rainier. They got the snow in the forecast up there.
Well, the Mount Rainier probably gets, I saw some ridiculous number, the amount of snow that they get each winter as the Pacific air slams into the Cascade, is forced upward into the colder air mass and produces those tremendous snow amounts. So it's not unusual, I think, to see snow, at least if you're on the summit of Mount Rainier at this time of the year. If you like snow, go there, I guess.
Yes, exactly. Now, I saw Mike 76 was asking me to take a look, and so did Robert Brown, about the system that's out in the tropical Atlantic now at about roughly 11 or 12 north and about 37 or 8 west. This is the new tropical weather outlook. And, one of the things I noticed this morning, they kind of scaled the percentage back by about 10%. And the thing that crossed my mind was, you know, they've had this system potentially developing into a tropical depression for the last couple of days now. And the fact that it hasn't done it is telling you that maybe things aren't just exactly what they seem in the atmosphere. And in fact, they actually cut it back a little bit here. They now have gone to 60% probability, talking about disorganized and somewhat limited showers with this tropical wave and broad area of low pressure 1,000 miles west-southwest of the Cabo Verde Islands. So now they have a 60% probability in the next 2 days and a 70% probability in the next five. Meanwhile, the Atlantic system is still 70% and 70%. It's changed little in organization this evening. I would agree with that. Still lacks a well-defined center. I would agree with that. Conditions are becoming more conducive, and I think the models reflect that, Joe. It's probably going to become a tropical storm once it gets north of 35 and starts to move to the northeast. And, you know, it's also going to get a little bit of baroclinic deepening in there, so that's going to be part of the equation as well. But, again, it's a positive for the northeast because of the fact that it's going to bring down all this lovely dry air.
Right. So I would not fear that. Other than, you know, as I mentioned back last weekend on a Saturday morning, I woke up and heard one local weathercaster say, well, if the GFS is right, we may see a hurricane moving up the eastern seaboard. Of course, that's only one model. And I said, well, if it's only one model and there's uncertainty, then why even bother mentioning it?
Yes, don't mention exactly. It. It's called context. Yes. Any fool can put up a map and say, oh, look, it's got a hurricane coming up the East Coast.
Right, exactly.
You know, if you're not going to give it context, don't bother. You know, just don't bother. So I'm loading up a couple of maps to show everybody a few things here with regards to this system out in the Atlantic, because everybody's getting bent out of shape over it. First of all, go ahead, Joe. I'm sorry.
Before you do that, today is a rather auspicious anniversary. We here in the Hudson Valley, and I asked this question on my Facebook page. How many of you remember? And I have it shared on the screen right now, Joe. If you want to bring my screen up or my shared screen up.
It's up.
And there it is. On this day in 1999, Hurricane Floyd moved into and passed the tri-state area. Actually, this tropical cyclone had been downgraded to a tropical storm by the time it reached our area, but it did bring a tremendous amount of rain and severe flooding. You talk about Ida. Well, often, again, when I worked at News 12, we often use Floyd as the benchmark for extreme flooding. And of course, we saw that matched with Irene in 2011. But this system, on average, dropped 5 to 12 inches of rain on the Hudson Valley, 5.40 inches at Westchester Airport, 12.43 inches in just 3 hours at Yorktown Heights. That was from Cooperative Weather Observer, the late, great Jerome Thaler, Dr. Thaler, who kept weather records at Yorktown Heights for almost 50 years. He got the Thomas Jefferson Award from the National Weather Service for all of his years of record keeping. All parkways in Westchester, of course, were closed. And until Irene and Sandy in 2011 and 2012, this was the most debilitating storm to hit the Hudson Valley in many years. Central Park, 5.02 inches of rain, forcing many businesses to close early and causing service on some subway lines to be suspended because of track flooding. The rainfall that fell, a record for this date, comparable to what falls for the entire summer, 4.97 inches, and more than half of that fell between 9 in the morning and 2 in the afternoon, and then it dumped an additional 3/4 inch from a final band of heavy rain that moved through between 8 and 9 p.m. That was one heck of a storm. I remember it well. I had to, in order to get back home the next day, I stayed over the night at the television station. But in order to get back home, I had to go through all kinds of detours. Finally ended up on like 247th Street in the Bronx, worked my way southward through the streets in the Bronx. Finally got to the Throgs Neck Bridge because I was living in Long Island back then. It was just an incredible, incredible storm, an incredible amount of rain. And again, the funny thing, and here's the irony, Joe, a lot of people And this did a real number on the tri-state area when we had Ida a few weeks ago and people were, you know, with a microphone in front of them getting sound bites. Oh, I don't remember anything like this. There's nothing even close to what we had for Ida. And I said, really? What a lapse. You don't remember Sandy? You don't remember Irene? You don't remember Floyd? But Ida was the one that did the worst in terms of flooding. What I'm just trying to say is every so often, and it seems like it's, every 10 or 12 years, we get a big storm, a major rainmaker, like an Ida, like an Irene, like a Floyd. Floyd was on this day in 1999, and I'm sure that sometime down the road, maybe at the end of this decade or at the beginning of the new decade, in the 2030s, we're going to see yet another tropical system bring a tremendous amount of rain. And then we'll have the politicians come on board and, you know, blame the weather forecasters as they are always want to do.
Okay. This is a tempting point. This is a tempting point for me to jump in and say, we didn't have all those storms back then. We didn't have bridges for, you know, that you had to drive to. You know?
I should one night just get that one sound bite and play it for everybody just to let you hear. Just to let you hear that is actually what this former New York State high official said in the aftermath of Sandy, that we never had storms like this when New York was being built, and they always happened somewhere else, but they never happened here. Yes, of course.
All right. Those of you who are on the chat board, I know you're getting into this climate change thing. So, you know, now that I've said that we're not going to discuss climate change, of course, everybody's discussing climate change.
And I really wasn't meant to, I really did not, you know, mean to talk about climate change in mentioning Floyd. I'm just mentioning that today is the anniversary of one of the most potent and most significant rainmakers that this area has ever seen in all these years, and over 150 years of record keeping. Floyd was a massive rain producer, if not for specifically for Central Park, which only he said had just over 5 inches, but they were playing Bound Brook, New Jersey, Joe, that was devastated by that storm, by Floyd. So, you know, and also parts of the Hudson Valley too.
Yeah.
Happy anniversary.
And yes, and you're right. There'll be others. There were many before these, and there will be many after these. They will still be happening long after you and I have gone to the weather center up in the sky somewhere. Sorry. So here's that tropical wave out in the Atlantic, the hurricane center has slightly reduced the probability of development. There's also another big wave coming off the African coast. And by the way, we're getting deeper into September, so the push from there westward starts to weaken as we go through the rest of this month. If you look at the lead wave, though, it is disorganized. It's kind of elongated north-south. So I can understand why they sort of backed off on the idea that maybe this is going to imminently develop. There just seems to be too much going on. Now, I'm just going to do just quickly looking here. This is the latest. I believe this is the 18Z. Yeah, so this was the 18Z GFS. So by tomorrow. Oh, come on. All right. So this is tomorrow morning. And you see where the low is. So we're looking at, I like to look at the wind shear and see what's going on in the upper atmosphere. So it seems to be in between two areas of strong shear. There's actually strong westerly shear going on just to the south of it in the upper atmosphere. There's also strong southwest winds. There's a deep trough in the way up in the atmosphere to its northwest. So it's just kind of in this zone in the middle where, you know, it's conducive, but there are issues, okay, with the shear to the south and the trough to its northwest. And moving it along, I mean, it does try to develop this. It's got the pressure down to 997 by early Sunday morning as it goes north, just to the northern part of the Leeward Islands. You know, it's not the most ideal setup here for strengthening. In fact, there's another strong trough that's going to run into off the East Coast by the time it gets to early next week. So I don't know. If the models don't seem to be doing much with this, I can sort of understand why, because the upper air conditions down the road are going to be problematic if this is what it looks like. Now, obviously, it could wind up looking different than this, but if you're concerned about, you know, if you are thinking that, oh, you know, this thing in the middle Atlantic is going to become imminently become a major system, you know, I don't know. The upper air is not showing that at the moment. So hopefully that will calm you down. Let me acknowledge, Joe, by the way, a super chat hits tonight from the chairman who he just finished his first week of the COVID hospital job, and he's wearing double masks. So everybody stay safe and have a great weekend, he says. And also Chuck Cardillo hitting Super Chat earlier, and David Fuller also hitting Super Chat tonight. So most appreciated. Thank you so very much from the three of you.
Yes. Well, I would like to echo the feeling is mutual. From up here.
Yes. And now we'll let's look at the by the way, the poll question tonight. I don't know if you saw the poll question tonight, Joe.
Yes, I did. Will we have snow before or by December 1st? Measurable,
well,
snow.
Yes. And
you're not talking about those occasional October flurries.
No. I'm talking about right. And it has to be for Boston, New York City, and Philadelphia, not or. And so all three cities have to have measurable snowfall before December 1st in the month of December. 55% of the vote say no. I would have guessed it would have been the snow lovers would have grabbed onto this somehow. But 45%, 86 votes cast, or is that an 8? I'm wearing my old glasses, so I can't really see that. It looks like 88. So 55-45 is the vote tally tonight. By the way, I don't know if this run did this, but you know, remember yesterday we were talking about showing how the GFS had this really deep trough in the east in the long range. Well, it did it again today. I wanted to see if it did it on this run. So looking ahead, I mean, we go back into a ridge position for the middle part of next week, the early part of next week, actually later Monday and Tuesday, big ridge along the east coast. But then the next trough comes in along about Wednesday, Thursday. Not a shabby-looking trough either. There'll be a decent push of dry air behind it. Another one follows right behind that, September 25th and 26th. Okay, so on this run, Joe, it looks like instead of making it had this massive cutoff low in the Great Lakes with a deep storm for this time of year. It even had snow on the Canadian side of the lakes. But now it's got a wrapped-up cutoff in upstate New York and Vermont and New Hampshire. So this would at least suggest that there would be a really nice cool shot of air for the last weekend of the month of September. And then, of course, that lifts out, and then we go back into a bit of a ridge position, only to have another trough to follow as we start the month of October, Mr. Rayo.
There you go.
It's moving along here.
I could tell you my back lawn is just filled with leaves. We're gonna make an attempt in the next few days to close the pool. I'm getting tired of taking leaves off the pool, and there's so many of them that get into the pool proper. So, got to get the new cover on, the leaf net on, because it's already coming down, Joe. I know that there's some falls, some autumns we've had in recent years where, you know, you say, it's not too bad. We got a few leaves here and there. My back lawn now is just filled with leaves. I'm planning to, you know, get rid of them, either vacuum or mulch them in to the ground over the weekend or whatever.
Mm-hmm. I have it
here. I got to tell you something. I really dislike fall compared to winter. Now, I'm not a big fan of snow. I don't like shoveling snow or blowing snow. But at least this is this point with snow. When we get snow up here, be it a few inches or even a ton of snow, like let's say 1 to 2 feet, we get it, you go out, you blow it, you shovel it, and that's pretty well it for the next several days or maybe even for the next week or two. When it comes to the fall, I could spend the entire afternoon or the entire day getting rid of all of the leaves that have fallen, go in, have a nice dinner, relax. I can open my eyes the next morning, look outside of my backyard, and it looks like I didn't do a darn thing, because the leaves at this time of the year, they just keep coming. They keep coming down and coming down and coming down. And it's like endless, like one day after another. And I'm not particularly, you know, they say, well, but look at the beautiful colors, Joe. Right. It's beautiful out there. Look at that. I said, yeah, it's colors up there. And there's colors down here on my lawn, too. My lawn, by the time we get to mid-October, if I don't do something, you know, the lawn looks like it has an orange carpet on it then, you know.
But this is where when God invented trees, he would have done well to have also thought of the umbrella concept. Where you could have just
the umbrella concept.
Right. So you could have just close the umbrella to close the leaves, and then you open it back up in the spring. By the way.
Exactly.
By the way, Billy the Kid on the chat board. Okay. So see, Joe, this is exactly what we've been talking about. Billy the Kid says, the poll question, okay. The poll question itself is an indicator of climate change. This question wouldn't have been asked 20 years ago.
Really? Billy the Kid?
Honestly,
let me tell you. Wait a minute.
Ahead, you answer it.
Hold on.
You answer it.
Hold on. When I went to City College, at the City College Weather Center, where we all ended up learning our stuff, getting our intellectual minds going with, you know, everything. All the meteorologists on the ninth floor of the science building, every year, as soon as the new semester started in September, we had the official CCNY snow pool. When will the first snowfall occur in New York City, the first measurable snow in Central Park? And the lion's share of a lot of us used to put up on the pool, the boxes, so to speak. We'd go for, you know, November, early November, mid, sometimes late November. A few would go after December 1st. Would it not, you know, this question wouldn't have been asked 20 years ago? We used to ask it more than 20 years ago. I won't tell you when I went to City College or when I was in college. It was a lot more than 20 years ago, and we were asking that question. So don't try to tie this in with climate change or global warming or whatever, Billy the Kid, because, kid, we were asking this question years and years and years ago as well.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm trying to understand the implication of the question in that, are you saying that it always snowed back then and we didn't have to ask the question, or are you saying that it's never snowed. It never snowed in the month of November before December 1st back then, but it does do it now. I mean, I'm not understanding the climate change connection here. Okay, I'm just not. Call me dense, but yeah, I'm not getting it. So,
and you know, it's December when you and I were growing up, Joe, in the Bronx. December was like a throwaway month.
Oh, okay.
Or doctor.
Right. Hang on. He says, and this is another problem. This is another big problem. Billy the Kid says, I thought my opinion was valid. I didn't say it wasn't. I was trying to understand. He says, I don't see measurable snows in Manhattan that early. Okay.
You're kidding me.
Okay.
You're
so kidding me. I guess.
Billy the Kid.
Go ahead, Joe. I know where you're going with this. Go.
Billy the Kid. When I was just about to say, when Joe and I were wee whittle tots and growing up, and we were all excited about becoming full-fledged meteorologists, I mean, December was the throwaway month. Yeah, you know, we'd watch Charlie Brown, the Christmas, and we'd watch the kids stick their tongues out and catch snowflakes, and Linus would make the comment, you know, or was it Lucy? I never eat December snowflakes.
Right.
I always wait until January. They sure look ripe to me. But that was for us in December. We never saw snow, or hardly ever saw snow. Yeah, there were a few times in December when there would be a significant snowfall, and maybe once in a while we would get a good old-fashioned snow around Christmas time for a white Christmas. But it was rare. I think the total amount of snow in December, Joe, back when you and I were like teenagers, at Central Park was like 2 inches, 3 inches.
Right. Now it's back up to six.
Now it's like 6 inches. Yeah. I mean, now it's not a throwaway month anymore. Now when we get to December, bank on it. We will get a significant or more than a couple of significant snowfalls. In fact, it's rare. In fact, my 3-inch rule, I always say that if we get less than 3 inches, then it doesn't look like it's going to be a significant snowfall year at Central Park. But we don't get those kind of years too often. More often than not, we get more than 3 inches. Some years, what was the year, Joe, about 10 years ago, we got like 19 inches of snow or 20 inches in December?
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah. There were two back-to-back years like that. No, the fact is that, and this is another interesting thing, but the fact is that the 70s, and I've said, and I've brought this up many times, at least as far as New York City is concerned, remember, you're talking one point, okay? You are talking about one point of geography. So when your perspective is what you see out your window, okay, there is a whole other surrounding world, even just a handful of miles away. It can be a whole different experience. But that being said, the fact is that snow normals have actually been rising over the last 30 years in the Northeast, particularly in New York City, in Boston, in much of coastal New England, coastal southern New England, Long Island, and they have not. We're not talking about an inch or two. We're talking about a significant rise, an almost 33% to 40% rise in snow. And I just ask the question: why is that? And if you go back and look, you find what looks like these cyclical periods where you get it, and we're apparently we have been in this upcycle since the year 2000. So for the last 20 years, we're in a snow upcycle. So if the next 10 years continue like the last 20, and yet if you talk to people, they will tell you, oh, you know, when I was a kid, especially our age. Joe, you know this. They'll say, oh, when I was a kid, it used to snow all the time. No, it didn't. You were a kid, we were in a down cycle of snow. The 70s, 80s, and 90s were the three least snowiest decades on record in New York City. So, yeah, I think people go to that snow thing as a positive thing because they remember the good memories when it comes to snowfall. But the whole point, whether you're talking about snow or storms or whatever, you forget the bad stuff, you remember the good stuff, and your perspective becomes only what you've seen, what you've experienced out your own window. And you got to remember, there's a whole big world out there. And, you know, what happens over you, and particularly New Yorkers have this idea that the world, pretty much revolves around them. So, if it doesn't happen there, it never happened. So anyway, just kind of like laying a little perspective on this conversation, the way it's evolved. And also, I mean, let's see. David says in Central Park, didn't they move where they get the snowfall measurements, more accurate measurements, which could make some bit of difference? Well, they don't take them. They don't measure them off the car tops on 49th Street anymore like they used to. So, and I can attest to that. But I just want to address one other thing, and then we'll do the GFS and get Brilla Jeopardy done and call it a night. So, you know, a number of you have been talking about, you know, back to that CO2 reduction and all the rest of it. And when I say about policy, so look, the thing is, I was watching a report on CNBC today, and they were talking, an analyst was talking about the fact that because they've kind of made this policy decision to stop, to slow and or stop the drilling of oil in the U.S., what they didn't do was have some kind of an alternative to go to. I mean, it's all fine and dandy to get off fossil fuels. I think it'll be a wonderful thing in 20 or 30 or 40 years when they do that. But if you're going to do that, you got to figure out, okay, well, if we're going to change this, we got to have some alternatives to go to make up the difference. Well, they didn't. So anyway, he was forecasting oil to go over $100 in the next 6 months because of these price pressures of lack of production, and I mean, so basically not enough supply. So when I talk about politics and policy, these are the kind of things that people need to have conversations about, because they do impact. They impact people's lives. They impact the economy. They impact the ability of people to have spendable income, et cetera, et cetera. That's why, you know, it's not a simple matter when you're trying to change the way we do, you know, we get energy here in this world. It's got to be a process, and it has to be a well thought out process, because otherwise you're going to run into unforeseen. You know, I've always said that I am a big supporter of the law of unintended consequences. You go out, you set out to do something good, which is all fine and dandy, and then you find out that by doing that good thing, you cause maybe a bad thing to happen someplace else. So that's my basic point going on with regards to what we had before. So I just wanted to at least address that particular comment. See, you can have civilized conversations on this channel.
You can. Yes, indeed, you can. But yeah, I hate when people just arbitrarily say one thing and they haven't done the research. And that's, you know, everybody says the same thing, you know, we didn't have global warming. I mean, back in the day, we always got snow in New York. It always was snowy, and it's absolutely untrue. I mean, we were, you and I know we were big snow lovers. We were members of the Snow Weenie. We were card-carrying members of the Snow Weenie Club back in the 70s, and we were rejoicing the winter of 1978 when we had back-to-back, you know, 15 to 20-inch snowstorms in January, late January, and again in early February, the blizzard of 78. That never happened during the decade of the 60s growing up, when we were around and watching the weather. It happened, though, in 78. That was one year that stood out. It was like a drought. And now all of a sudden, as you pointed out, ever since like 1995, especially in December, things have turned around completely.
Well, after the 95...
Will it turn around again?
After the 95-96 winter, the next four winters were, for snow lovers, was suicidal. I mean, it was horrible. It was just awful. I mean, those were the four least, probably that 4 year period was one of the least snowiest periods in New York City history, if you ran back to the records long enough. And then all of a sudden it went kaboom once we got into the first decade of the 2000s. All right, no big
wasn't
issues.
Wasn't one of those years, it didn't snow at all or hardly anything fell in New York until the day after the vernal equinox.
Yes,
and then we had like a 5-inch snowfall.
I want to say that was 97, 98 that happened. Yeah. I think that was that winter. And by the way,
that was an El Nino, the year of the great El Nino.
And by the way, that 5-inch snowfall that happened in New York City was relatively localized, because a lot of places not that far away got nothing or got rain.
Right.
So anyhow, look, as far as the weekend is concerned, if you look at the GFS, actually, you know, the low off the East Coast pulls away. There's that weak little front that comes through Saturday night. But Saturday looks good. Kind of a changeable day tomorrow with that low to the south. Still getting some leftover rains in the Gulf Coast. You got this big, strong cold front coming into the Pacific Northwest with very heavy rains there, and then another one follows. But we're going to be okay here in the East. The next chance of anything significant looks like next Wednesday with the cold front. That's that next upper trough swinging by, so maybe some showers and storms with that. Cooler and drier behind it. That goes out. Here comes another front for next weekend. And then that lifts up and goes out, and then that high goes, and here comes the next front, and then there's a tropical storm in the Gulf of Mexico at the end of the forecast period. Okay, enough. It's coming up on 8:30, so let's do some Briller Jeopardy here, and let's get this show done so we can have 2 days of peace.
All right. Here is another special Briller Jeopardy with one of the Joe and Joe moderators, the chairman. So, Joe, you got to know your facts about Mr. Briller tonight.
Okie doke.
And the first question out of the box is, what county in New Jersey does the chairman live? Does he live?
Monmouth.
Well, I'm not going to give you the list. Monmouth County is correct. Here's number two. Does the chairman have a chairman cap, a chairman shirt, a chairman tie?
A chairman cap, a chairman shirt, or a chairman tie?
Yes. A cap, a shirt, or a tie?
I'll say a cap.
And as debonair as Curtis Sliwa has looked all of these years with his cap, so does the chairman with his.
Okay.
He wears a chairman cap. Number three, where does the chairman like to vacation in New Jersey? Does he like to vacation in
Wildwood, New Jersey? Next.
You don't want to hear the other three?
No, that's the next. Go on.
No, I mean,
well, there's Wildwood, there's Wildwood Crest.
No. It was a multiple choice question. And the first of the four multiple choices was Wawa.
Oh, Wawa. Okay. Well, that's on the way to Wildwood.
Well, yeah. Or Watchung or Whiting. Anyway, it was Wildwood. Number four, the chairman has lived in all the following places except Spring Valley, Asbury Park, Manalapan, Rochester, or Bordentown. Isn't that where Elsie lives?
Yeah. I'm sorry, give me the choices again.
Spring Valley, Asbury Park, Manalapan, Rochester, or Bordentown. Which of those places has the chairman not lived?
Well, I know he's lived in Rochester because he did mention it to me a couple of times. So that we can cross off. As for the other four, I'll say Spring Valley.
It was Elsie and Elmertown.
Oh, Bordentown. Elmertown, Bordentown?
Well, you know, I presume Elsie is married to Elmer.
Oh, by the way, you know that my local supermarket sells Borden milk with Elsie the cow on it. And, Joe, they have seal tests. Remember seal test?
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Wow. That's a blast from the past.
Yes, it is. Okay, go ahead. Next question.
Do they have a bohack?
No, there are no bohacks.
All right. Final question. Oh, no, wait a minute. This is not the final. Sorry about that. This is number five. What is the only sport the chairman still plays? Does he still play baseball, basketball, bowling, tennis, golf, or soccer?
Oh, tennis.
Tennis is correct. And here's the – boy, you really know you're Scott Briller. Final question. Bonus question. How many times has the chairman been married? Once, twice, three, four, or seven times? He's married seven times. He's in the Mickey Rooney sector. Four times would be Johnny Carson sector.
It's either two or three. I'll say three.
Well, you'll have to. It was two. 1987 and 1996. So there you are.
Okay.
And that, ladies and gentlemen, is tonight's wonderful Briller Jeopardy.
Yes.
on the Briller.
By the way, Billy the Kid, thank you for the kind words. And I just want to say, you know, I know you're a grandfather and you're kind of going on this sort of emotional train with regards to saving your grandchildren. And I get that. I'm a grandfather. But look, just remember, every generation, the ones before us and the ones that come after us, but every generation has screwed up this earth in one way or another. And they leave it for the next generation to fix that problem. And they do, but they usually do. And then they screw up something else. So, you know, I heard this saying, and I think there's so much truth to it. It says about history repeating itself. That we each generation goes as out of their way to not make the same mistakes that their parents made, but as a result, they wind up making the mistakes that their grandparents made. And I think that actually makes a lot of sense. So just bear that in mind. They'll fix the problem only to create another one. So don't worry. They'll be here, and your great grandchildren and every, you know, the generations that'll follow, they'll be, you know, we'll be long gone from this earth. So instead of worrying about them, enjoy them and have some fun. Okay? That's all I can tell you.
And that's on that happy note, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes, it's a Thursday.
You know what?
By the way.
You know what you ought to do, Joe?
Yeah, what?
We ought to get a gavel. We ought to get a gavel and gavel the nightly meeting to an end, you know?
Oh, we could get the
Monty. I now call the meeting.
The Monty Python judges skit. I waggled me wing. Ever so slightly, I waggled me wing.
I now call the meeting of the Jerry Mahoney Club adjourned.
Right. Call this a court. Call this a court. Oh, good Lord. Well, it was a fun week. By the way, should we put out an APB for La Fairchild? Well, Smart Amat too. But for Smart Amat and for La Fairchild, I mean, La Fairchild has been gone for 2 months now. Maybe he just decided that he couldn't stand the fact that we're not on 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And, you know, went to some other weather channel that's on 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
And he's probably making, telling everybody how bad we are. Because that's all he ever did when he was on here on the chat board. It was, you know, telling us, you know, how terrible one weathercaster or another weathercaster was. You know, I hate this one. I hate that one or whatever.
Yes. Oh, God. So anyway, so we'll be back Sunday at the usual Sunday morning time of 11 a.m. Eastern. So you have a good 2 days. So unless the world, unless the weather world decides to come to an end and a major hurricane forms somewhere nearby, we will be off tomorrow and we'll be off Friday. Thanks for the super chat hits, Chuck Cardillo, David Fuller, and the chairman, Scott Briller. And we'll see you on Sunday.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.